The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several sources. I'm going to start with the continuation of an article in AARP, the magazine, about Rob Lowe. We have some questions and answers here. What gigs helped Lowe segue into comedic roles and then into dramas? SNL and The West Wing, both of them. On March 17, 1990, he landed a dream gig guest hosting Saturday Night Live. That went so well that I got invited into that world, and that led to Wayne's World, Tommy Boy, Austin Powers, which led to my comedy career, which continues. Lowe then found his way into The West Wing from 1999 to 2003. He walked away over rumored tension and salary disputes, but today he describes The West Wing as seismic, leading him directly to my adult era. This included notable roles in Brothers and Sisters, Parks and Recreation, The Grinder, and 911 Lone Star. Next question. What word made its way into nearly every episode of Parks and Recreation he appeared in? Actually, brat, literally, or woof? It was literally. Literally, it's also featured in the name of his podcast and used by Lowe literally six times in his interview with AARP. And one more question for today. Which of Lowe's classic films is getting a sequel? The Outsiders, St. Elmo's Fire, or The Breakfast Club? It's St. Elmo's Fire. Lowe has done drama, romance, comedy, and even reality TV on The Lowe Files, where he traveled the country with his sons to investigate unsolved mysteries. He has not, however, turned his back on life before the 90s. Last year, he was happy to sit down with Andrew McCarthy for Bratz, the critically praised Brat Pack documentary. And he has been cheering on Pack pal Demi Moore for her return to the spotlight with her Golden Globe and AARP Movies for Grownups winning turn in The Substance. But he just seems as excited to possibly reunite with her and other Bratz on screen for the long-anticipated sequel to St. Elmo's Fire. We made a movie that worked, exploring what we were like when we were 21, he said. Let's see what we're like when we're 61. Now, from the same magazine, let's look at an article, From Vietnam to America, Refugee Experiences. And this is a pretty long article, but I'm going to take several little excerpts from it. Service to Others, Rear Admiral Juan Nguyen, 66. On Veterans Day, this past November, a crowd gathered in a field next to a veterans monument in the small town of Draper, Utah. The keynote speaker was retired Rear Admiral Juan Nguyen. He was the first Vietnamese-born U.S. naval officer to attain that rank. Born in Vietnam, he escaped with an uncle after his family was killed. He joined the Navy in 1993. When I came here in 75, I landed in Guam, he said, and seeing all these servicemen and women, the Marine Corps, the sailors, they were working hard to make sure we were okay. Part of my journey is about trying to get rid of the trauma of the past, and the best way to overcome this was to be of service to others. Then an ethnic enclave, Frank Yao, 76. I was among the first group of Vietnamese Americans who came to this country, said Frank Yao, who fled Saigon at age 26. And I could see there was a need to have an ethnic enclave for this new group. He got his real estate license and in 1978 founded Bridge Creek Development, a builder of Orange County, California's Little Saigon, with nearly 200,000 residents. It includes the Asian Garden Mall, the largest Vietnamese shopping center in the U.S., home to pho restaurants, Vietnamese coffee shops, and jewelry stores. It may feel like Saigon, but Yao embraces his new home. My two daughters went to good schools, and we are doing good things for society. This accomplishment of assimilating into a new society could only happen in America. And finally, we are living the American dream. Cameron Tuong McClure, 56. Cameron Tuong McClure, her married name, and her family were among the boat people who escaped Vietnam without help from American authorities. She was 10 or 11, living in Santa Cruz, California, when a woman approached and said, "My son died for you. You better make something of your life." Tuong McClure went to college and built a marketing and business consulting career. She also has dedicated time to American veteran causes. "I want every veteran to see that we are the children and that you have helped to, keep safe. We are living the American dream, which is what they fought to help us accomplish. Thank you for giving me my life." Now let's look at AARP, the bulletin, and this article entitled Fraud Watch. Steer clear of customer service scams, how to avoid a treacherous and growing trap. This is by Ken Budd. Steve C. wanted to return a TV stand. The Indiana resident, who wanted to conceal his last name to avoid further attempted scams, asked his phone's voice assistant to find Amazon customer service, and he was quickly connected. But the call didn't go as planned. The Amazon customer service agent warned Steve his account was littered with fraudulent charges, and if he didn't pay them, he could be accused of money laundering. Confused, but also concerned, Steve reluctantly transferred $34,000 via Bitcoin to an account he was directed to by the Amazon agent. With that, Steve joined the growing ranks of Americans who have been scammed by phony customer service sites. The customer service number was a bogus one planted by crooks, and the agent was a criminal with a well-rehearsed plan to steal his money. At the AARP Fraud Watch Network, customer service scams are an everyday occurrence, says Andy Knofzinger, Director of Fraud Victim Support. Knofzinger's team has fielded calls from people who fell victim to scammers after Googling customer service for companies such as Geico, Spectrum, and Wells Fargo, and clicking on illegitimate links. Alan R., a New York resident, contacted the Fraud Watch Network after searching for Facebook customer support when his account was hacked. A phone call led to an imposter who charged a fee to supposedly solve the problem. Customer service fraud is a type of imposter scam, the most commonly reported scam in the U.S., the Federal Trade Commission reported earlier this year. And customer service scams are growing. In February, Amazon reported a 33% increase since December in customer service impersonation scams on social media. In these cases, scammers monitor complaints and reply with fake info. How do searches for customer service numbers lead people into the traps of crooks? Criminals create phony sites and then buy ads that force their sites to the top of routine Google or voice-assisted searches. Some sophisticated scam rings are also manipulating algorithms to make their phony sites rise to the top of searches. An ongoing investigation led by Michelle Couch Friedman, founder of advocacy organization ConsumerRescue.org, found that scam rings often hack into government websites and create message boards that can be seen only from search results. A message board discussion about an airline, for example, might include articles recommending a fake call center. Those posts and the fact that they're hosted on seemingly legitimate forums can then boost search engine results for the imposter site. Once those phony numbers are called, practiced criminals take over. When they start asking for money, something should have gone off in my head, Alan says, but it sounded just like customer service calls I've had before. The callers at scam centers are often friendly, reassuring, and believable. After Consumer Rescue's investigation, many of the message boards were removed, but the fix was temporary. Lots of them are taken down, Couch Friedman said, but more and more pop up. Here's how experts say you can curtail scams linked to customer service calls. Slow down. When you're looking up a customer service phone number, something has usually gone wrong, said Nofsinger. And when something is wrong, you're anxious, nervous, and working quickly. Her advice? Take a moment, catch your breath, and calmly scrutinize search results, particularly URLs. Be especially careful when booking a trip. Travel is a common source of customer service fraud as passengers scramble to resolve missed connections and canceled flights. To protect yourself, log in to your airline account and contact customer service through the airline's app, the Federal Trade Commission recommends. Avoid posting complaints about customer service on social media. When you gripe on sites like Quora or Reddit, you're also signaling scammers. They are all over those websites, acting like helpful members of the community, Couch Friedman warns. They'll say, oh, here's the number you need, but it's the number for their fake call center. Ignore unsolicited messages about customer service sites. Don't answer calls from unfamiliar numbers. Don't click on unsolicited links, and don't give anyone remote access to your computer. Even if a company's name appears on your phone, don't answer. Scammers can make their numbers look legit. If you get a pop-up, an email, a text message, anything saying there's a problem with your accounts, do not call that number, Nofsinger says. And if someone wants you to pay with cryptocurrency or gift cards or directs you to a crypto ATM machine, it's 100% a scam, Nofsinger advises. The author of this piece, Ken Budd, writes about fraud and travel for the AARP Bulletin. Now, in one of the AARP bulletins, there's a cover article on Social Security and Medicare. It's very long, so I'm not going to be able to read the whole thing, but I'm going to cover the little sidebars and see if that gives us some clarity. But first of all, let's look at a timeline, key moments in the history of Social Security and Medicare. August 14, 1935, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signs the Social Security Act into law. January 1937, first Social Security benefits are paid out in the form of one-time lump sum payments. August 10, 1939, program broadens to include benefits for workers' dependents and survivors. January 31, 1940, Ida M. Fuller becomes the first person to receive a monthly benefit. Her first check is for $22.54, the inflation-adjusted equivalent of $518.58 today. October 1950, Congress authorizes the first cost of living adjustment, COLA, an increase of 77%. August 1, 1956, Social Security Act is amended to provide benefits to workers with disabilities ages 50 to 64. 1961, President John F. Kennedy, one of his tasks, force recommends national health insurance for those 65 plus. June 30, 1961, Social Security Act is amended to reduce the minimum eligibility age for retirement benefits to 62. In 1965, legislation creating Medicare as well as Medicaid for low-income people passes Congress in July and is signed by President Lyndon B. Johnson. 1996, when Medicare services actually begin on July 1st, more than 19 million Americans age 65 and older enroll in the program. 1972, President Richard M. Nixon extends Medicare eligibility to individuals under age 65 who have long-term disabilities or chronic renal disease. October 1972, Congress establishes Supplemental Security Income, SSI, providing payments to people who are 65 or older, blind or have a disability, and have very low incomes. July 1975, the first annual automatic COLA kicks in, boosting benefits that year by 8%. April 20, 1983, President Ronald Reagan signs into law sweeping changes to Social Security aimed at shoring up the program's financial footing. May 17, 1994, the SSA official website is launched. 1999, private insurance plans, now called Medicare Advantage plans, begin giving users HMO-style options. December 8, 2003, President George W. Bush signs the Medicare Modernization Act, which establishes a prescription drug benefit. 2006, on January 1st, Medicare Part D gives beneficiaries prescription drug coverage. 2007, Medicare beneficiaries with higher incomes must start paying higher premiums for Part B under changes in a 2003 law. January 1, 2009, full retirement age increases from 65 to 66 for those born in 1943 or later. It's now 67 if born in 1960 or later. 2009, Americans who are of an age to receive Social Security retirement benefits are given the option to file for those benefits online. 2010, the Affordable Care Act, signed by President Barack Obama, makes some preventative care services free under Medicare. 2018, all enrollees start to receive new Medicare cards with an 11-digit combination of numbers and letters rather than a Social Security number to combat ID theft and Medicare fraud. 2019, Medicare Advantage plans can offer enrollees with chronic conditions additional health-related benefits. 2022, on August 16th, President Joe Biden signs the Inflation Reduction Act, which makes several enhancements to Medicare prescription drug coverage. May 6, 2024, Social Security's trustees project that unless changes are made to the program, incoming taxes will cover only 83% of the scheduled benefits beyond 2035. In 2025, the amount of people in Part D plans, including Medicare Advantage plans, can pay out of pocket for their prescriptions is capped $2,000 in 2025. And finally, 2026, Medicare drug price negotiations start to take effect and negotiated prices become available for 10 Part D drugs. The program will expand to Part B drugs in coming years. Now let's look at the ABCs of Medicare. Sorting through Medicare's alphabet soup of options can induce headaches. With that in mind, here are some ABCs. E is for enrolling. You can enroll at ssa.gov/Medicare/sign-up or by making an appointment at a Social Security Administration office or by calling 800-772-1213. Don't miss any deadlines or you could have to wait for coverage and even pay a higher premium the rest of your life. Check Medicare.gov for deadlines, which can vary if, for instance, you still have health coverage through an employer. Part A. You won't pay a premium for Part A coverage for hospitalization if you are 65 or older and you or a spouse worked and paid Medicare taxes for at least 10 years. But that leaves a lot uncovered, like doctor visits, prescription drugs, and other care. That's why many people pay for additional coverage, and that's where choices get complicated. Part B. Medicare Part B helps cover a range of outpatient items and services, including office visits, preventative care, and lab tests. The standard cost for Part B is $185 a month for those with a modified adjusted gross income of $106,000 or less. Higher earners pay more. The deductible is $257 a year. You must enroll in Part B to be eligible to choose a Medicare Advantage plan to supplement your health coverage. Part C. That's another name for private Medicare Advantage plans. There's no one-size-fits-all answer to whether original Medicare or Advantage plans are best. Advantage plans can charge an additional premium on top of your Part B premium, but some plans will actually pay some or all of that premium for you. Most plans include drug coverage for prescriptions you pick up at a pharmacy. More expensive plans offer bells and whistles like dental coverage, but copays and deductibles can raise the cost. They also have more limited lists of doctors in their networks and can require prior approval for procedures. Part D. The hot news in Medicare is better benefits for Part D, which covers Rx drugs. There is a new annual out-of-pocket spending cap for covered drugs, $2,000 in 2025. The Medicare Extra Help program offers reductions on out-of-pocket costs under Part D for those with limited resources. For details, check secure.ssa.gov/I-1020/start. M is for Medicaid. Many older Americans who qualify for Medicare also qualify for Medicaid, which was created at the same time. Today, Medicaid is a top payer of long-term care, which is not covered by Medicare. H is for help. Medicare savings programs help with out-of-pocket expenses like premiums, deductibles, and copays for Parts A and B. MSPs are available through state Medicaid offices. Go to medicare.gov/basics/costs/help/Medicare-savings-programs. Still uneasy swimming in Medicare's alphabet soup? States have a state health insurance assistance program that can help. Find yours at SHIP, SHIPHELP.org, or you can call 877-839-2675 and say Medicare. Now let's look at the truth behind Social Security myths. In the 90 years of its existence, Social Security has accumulated its share of misconceptions and myths. Here are seven important facts worth knowing. Now, we probably won't get through them all today, but let's give it a start. Fact: it will be there when I retire. Social Security hasn't missed a payment since the day it started. It does have a long-term challenge with retirees drawing more benefits than payroll taxes expected to come in. But even if Congress does nothing, which political experts say is unlikely because of the program's popularity, Social Security can keep paying most benefits until the end of this century. It's not something people should lose sleep over, says Paul Vanderwater, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Max Richtman, president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, says younger people should feel secure. This program is not only important to their parents, their grandparents, but also for them. Fact: Congress has never raided the trust fund. In years where Social Security payroll taxes total more than is paid out in benefits, the surplus is added to the Social Security trust fund for later use. Of course, the $2.7 trillion surplus accumulated over decades is not sitting around in cash. It's invested in interest-paying bonds. The Social Security investments are Treasury bonds backed by the U.S. government. Fact: undocumented immigrants are not draining Social Security by collecting retirement benefits. While some undocumented workers use fake security, Social Security numbers and pay into the system, they can't collect benefits unless they become legal residents or U.S. citizens. Rickman notes that undocumented workers who pay into Social Security provide it with revenue but never receive the benefits. Fact: the annual cost of living adjustment, COLA, does not keep up with the inflation older Americans face. Each year, benefits checks are adjusted to reflect inflation, but the formula is based on a market basket of goods used by average urban workers, not retirees. So when medical costs rise faster than other products, for instance, those who are heavy users of health care end up shortchanged, according to Advocates for Older Americans. Some lawmakers have proposed using a price index for older consumers that better reflects their buying patterns to preserve their purchasing power. Fact: Social Security is not like an individual retirement savings account. The government does not stow your payroll tax contributions in a personal account for you to be paid out with interest when you retire. Your benefit is based on how much money you earned over your working life, not how much you paid into the system. As noted above, those contributions fund benefits for current retirees. When you retire, those still working will cover your benefits, and so on. Over their lifetimes, most people get more from Social Security and Medicare than they pay in, according to analyses by the Urban Institute, a nonpartisan think tank. Fact: you don't lose benefits permanently if you keep working. Social Security does have a rule called the earnings limit that can temporarily reduce the benefits of people still working, but the rule covers only people who claim benefits before full retirement age, FRA, and continue working. In this circumstance, Social Security withholds a portion of benefits if earnings from work exceed a set cap, which changes every year and differs depending on how close you are to full retirement age. In 2025, if you are working and will not reach FRA until a later year, your Social Security payments will be reduced by $1 for every $2 in earnings above $23,400. In the month you hit FRA, the earnings test goes away. There's no benefit reduction whatever in your income. Well, folks, we have reached the end of the time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.